I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. There's a really thoughtful book that's been out since the fall that looks at the unique culture and spirituality of the Pacific Northwest region, British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. It is a collection of thought-provoking essays by 15 various writers, scholars, historians, pollsters, poets, philosophers, and more. The collection is edited by my guest now, the award-winning Vancouver Sun columnist Douglas Todd. The book is called Cascadia, The Elusive Utopia, Exploring the Spirit of the Pacific Northwest. It is well worth picking up as it touches on many aspects of life, politics, culture, religion, and spirituality, and more. Published by Ronsdale Press, the book retails for $21.95. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Doug Todd. Good morning, Mr. Todd.
Hi, Doug. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. I was born here. My parents are immigrants.
Right.
And I suppose being born here, I've sort of taken this place for granted. Looking at some of the contributors to the book and their sort of bios and what they've written about themselves and coming here or having, in some cases, been born here.
Yeah.
That people that come here seem to appreciate it, seem to realize it more.
That's a very good point, actually. I was born here, too, a third-generation Vancouverite, which I try to, take advantage of at parties and stuff like that to be a unique person. But it just got me thinking about what are the things about this region that I just take for granted and that are part of, they're in my bones, and in the bones of a lot of people here that we just don't identify very often. I think the book was my own attempt, and I think it's helping readers just kind of almost enhance their identities by getting some language to describe the kind of people we are and the kind of values we have and where we find the sense of spirituality and meaning. The book touches on tons of things, economics and politics and everything like that, but it really looks at that sense of, as I say, where do we find meaning? In BC, in Cascadia, Oregon and Washington, we find it in a slightly different way from people in other parts of the world, I think.
Just about the book, before we get into some of the stuff you're discussing, how did this book come about?
Well, I think there's multiple origins on it. One is that I've always been interested in bioregionalism for about 15 years, the idea that our culture is created by the region we're in more than we like to think. Like, we're kind of in a globalized culture now, right, where McDonald's or whatever, Microsoft seems to influence our lives more than the place we're actually from, but this is a kind of attempt to bring it back to a place that we know we actually are shaped by our regions more than we think and that we should be. We'll get some more respect for where we are and treat the region better. It also comes from some religions, inspired by some religion scholarship that took place in the United States, some people who are doing some great work. I wanted to introduce the scholars and thinkers up in British Columbia, sort of get a dialogue going across the border, because it doesn't happen very often. That international border creates a lot of barriers that keep kind of really creative and visionary people not connected to each other as much as they should.
So how do we think? There's that idea that this is the left coast, that we're all tie-dyed, tree-hugging wusses, as someone wrote in the book. Is that what we are, do you think?
Oh, I think there's an element of that there. Where the book starts is kind of with a paradox, is that we are the most, it's called unchurched region of the continent. The fewest people here go to a religious institution on a regular basis, so we're the most secular region of the continent. That includes Washington and Oregon. So what does that mean about, like, our attendance rates are really low, so what does that mean about where people here find meaning? And I know when I talk to people, they all say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And I'm sure you've heard it a thousand times, you might even say it yourself. And so I wanted to explore, what does that mean? And so that's in it, this book explores it, how there's a lot of sense of nature reverence here. People get their meaning from the spectacular wilderness that you can't avoid here, and it's quite beautiful and life-giving. But then, and just on sort of more values that aren't related directly to religion, we did some polling in the book and found that people in this region are much more freedom-oriented than people in other parts of the continent. You know, we have the highest acceptance rates of marijuana use and homosexuality and those kind of just obvious things. There's a real optimism here. It shows up in the polling that people think, oh, we can do it. You know, we can create something brand new that nobody else has ever done. So those are kind of, and then there's even a, sort of a, maybe a negative side is a bit of a lack of a sense of history. You know, we're so new and we're a bit individualistic. We kind of do everything on our own, which can be good and bad. Don't have a really strong sense of community. So we kind of have to balance those things. And the book is kind of calling for people in Cascadia to kind of grow up, you know, be a bit more mature and not just kind of smug about, oh, we're in the left coast, it's so great, and we're so free to, we're so free and so hip and so recreational. It's asking people to look a bit deeper.
On this idea of how we identify ourselves in terms of our faith, mm-hmm. that we're secular, there are some religious people who would say that being of faith mm-hmm. Equals being ethical and that sort. Are we less ethical, do you think, on this coast?
Well, that is a good question. Let's see. You know, if somebody thinks, there's just many aspects to that. If somebody thinks being religious is just doing what your leader tells you, I don't think it's a very healthy form of religion, right? But if somebody thinks religious is being part of a spiritual community that's kind of mature and that challenges each other and to be ethical, I think, and to think more communally and about the common good rather than just the individual good, how am I going to get success, how am I going to find enlightenment individually, I think, you know, I can't say we're less ethical, but I would wonder if maybe we, in a way, could be, because we're less communally oriented. We're kind of a bit more think about ourselves, right?
And in light of this economic crisis that we're in, yeah. Do we think differently than, say, other parts of North America, like, say, the East Coast, the South, perhaps, or the North?
In this economic crisis?
Yeah, like the way we think about ourselves and our place in society. I mean, they say that in times of economic crisis, we tend to become more selfish. And right. Do you find that that's the case here?
I think there would be a tendency towards that. You know, not that everybody here is less, more selfish or anything, but maybe if you did some polling, you'd show that there's a bit more of an inclination that way. That we do tend, just on average, to be more, look out for yourself, you know. And if you're having trouble, you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You don't wait for the society to come through, you know, to support you. You don't expect much from the wider society, which is actually a value that, you know, personally I don't really share. I think I'd like to see us a bit more communally oriented here. So, yeah, I think there's a real danger that we could become kind of pretty self-absorbed here.
And don't you find that there is a great contrast there, that we are self-absorbed, but at the same time we're quite tolerant?
Well, that's a very good point, actually, because that tolerance is really a plus, right?
Yeah.
We don't go around saying, demonizing other people from different nationalities or whatever very easily. We kind of give people some room to do their own thing. and that's quite generally positive. And that way we could be a bit of a model for the rest of the continent, right? We don't polarize super easily, although that happens here too. But there is a bit of there is definitely a live and let live kind of motto here. As I say, the downside is just a little bit that, oh, we don't even care what the other person thinks, as opposed to letting them be, right?
So as we grow up as a more urbanized sort of society,
yeah.
What are some of the growing pains that you foresee?
Yeah, let's see. Well, a deeper sense of history, and we have to develop, which I think is, you know, it's not being helped too much by the kind of technological age where fewer people are reading newspapers and books and stuff like that. But I'm not about to give up on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a lot of nature reverence here. People go into nature kayaking or just for a hike, and they truly do have mystical experiences in nature, and I think that's really fabulous. But I think there can be a bit of a romanticization of wilderness, and that we have to learn how to be ecological in really practical ways that involve getting involved in politics and environmental groups and, you know, really looking at hard policy decisions rather than just having wonderful experiences in the wilderness. So I think that's going to demand something of people.
What about urban centers? Do you think that we're developing them well?
Well, Vancouver is a model, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, for planners come here from all over North America to see what Vancouver's done because of the density and the livability of the downtown core. It's considered a huge success around the world, and especially in North America where downtown cores are so dead. So I think we're doing well there. Seattle and Portland look to Vancouver for ideas on how to develop. And they're considered quite livable cities too. So part of the purpose of the book was to get more cross-fertilization of just even within this region. But we all looked at even beyond the region with some envy, I think. I think we're trying to be sensitive to, you know, urban development, which is where most of us live in Cascadia. We're being pretty sensitive about nature, and the ecology, but we've got a ways to go.
What has the Aboriginal experience contributed to this idea of Cascadia?
Yeah, I think it's huge. That, you know, if we're the least churched region of the continent, people kind of by default are looking to the Aboriginal spirituality for a model or for inspiration. And, and Aboriginal spirituality is very earth-based, kind of almost pantheistic in the sense that nature is alive and animals have spirits or that sort of thing, that I think a lot of, you know, non-Aboriginals are drawn to that, somewhat naively occasionally, but I think there's something to be learned from it in all its complexity. It's sort of like, you know, when you go to the Vancouver airport, like, everything is Aboriginal art everywhere, which is fantastic, and kind of creates our identity. I hope that people look at it in some depth rather than just sort of thinking that buying a piece of Aboriginal art makes them deep thinkers or something,
yeah,
or deeply spiritual. I think it could be a bit superficial. Because I think a real spirituality, to be honest, like, requires being a member of some sort of community. And a lot of people aren't ready to do that because they think communities are pretty, very imperfect, which they are, but that's part of life.
In the mid-90s, when I was in high school, I used to listen to Rafe Mayer a lot, and he used to always talk about sort of, and you mentioned it in the book, about Cascadia sort of becoming a political entity one day.
Yeah.
Do you still sense that that's something that's a possibility, perhaps?
I don't think it will become a political entity in itself, like in a freestanding, independent nation. Although I must admit, in my more romantic moments, I think, geez, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen. And I do value the border, right? And in some sense, even though it's so annoying to wait 2 hours for just go for a little jaunt. But anyways, I like being Canadian, and I like our distinct identity that's developed. So I'm not going to be lobbying to get rid of the border. But I do think we could develop lots more binational connections throughout the region, because I generally think somebody in Vancouver is more like somebody in Seattle than we are like somebody in Calgary, right? And not to mention that Calgary's four times farther away than Seattle. So why not develop a sense of local regional identity? I think it's a way to deepen, you know, the book talks about having a sense of place or a spirituality of place. And I think that's really important for people to discover and value, because I think it could make us more appreciative of the place. The book is, in a sense, of trying to fight that idea that people in British Columbia are just kind of passing through and just using it for their own personal ends. But it's almost calling for more loyalty to this, BC, since we're in BC, but also Washington and Oregon.
In terms of putting this book together, how did you get all these this great cross-section of contributors?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I thought they were a pretty great collection. Everybody I asked to contribute said yes. Like, these are all my first picks. You know, political scientists and poets like George Bowery, and then these are American religion scholars who, they're not known here, but they're the top of their field down there. And I want them to be more known here, and that's going to happen. I just wanted to be a really interdisciplinary book, which I think is how academia should run, actually. And I also, like, the book has a fair amount of academics in it, but I asked them all to kind of speak from their hearts more than just their heads, and actually, and express their values about what they want to see happen here, not just sort of be stand back academics who never take a stand. Yeah. I asked them all to kind of take a stand. And they're all people that I've admired over the years, people like Phil Resnick, the political scientist, and Dean Barman, the historian. They've all seemed like people who actually give a damn about this place rather than just whatever, just want to be successful in their own careers.
And the response to the books has been pretty good, has it?
It's been quite good, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing lots of speaking, and it's selling well, and people are very appreciative. It's, you know, and basically the parlor room game becomes discussing which chapters people like and which they have trouble with. And it's so unpredictable, like, which, so much is based on the individual, which chapter they'll like and which ones they like and which ones they don't.
And on your blog on the Sun site, there's been a lot of discussion in the last few weeks about this idea of BC changing its name.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Was that an idea that you had, or...?
Yeah, it's something that's just been at the back of my mind. And I just thought, why not get a bit of a contest going? Also, I just noticed that the Oregonian newspaper, which is the big paper in Portland, has got a contest going to redesign the Oregon flag.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just part of, like, my little kind of very informal contest. And let's name British Columbia, because the word British is so kind of unfortunate and just anachronistic and sort of says so little about the place. If it gives the impression we're just some little forgotten colony of Britain, it's just unfortunate. And I love Britain, and might go there next month, and all my roots are British, but I just don't think it's that helpful a name. So,
what are some of the names that you've come up with?
Well, mostly it's what readers are coming up with. It will be extremely hard to change the name British Columbia. It probably won't happen, but I think it's valuable to have the debate, because I think it helps people think about, well, what does it mean to be a British Columbian? So people are suggesting Aboriginal names, although they're more saying it should be an Aboriginal name rather than coming up with one, which says something.
Yeah.
Other people are saying Pacifica or New Columbia or Pacific Columbia. Or people are saying North Cascadia, because Cascadia is a bioregion and we're the northern part of it. Let's see, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and what have some of your readers said about you bringing this up?
They're pretty serious. Like, it really, some people, I'd say about a third people just kind of go ballistic. They see red when they see somebody even daring to suggest changing the name. Then a third come up with kind of funny names, which I can't quite remember right now. And then a third take it all kind of seriously and think, yeah, we should work on this, because it's the name doesn't fit that well any 150 years later after Queen Victoria came up with it, basically to distinguish us from the United States, because there is still the war there the conflict over whether United States would annex us, so she felt better name it British. She also wanted to distinguish us from Colombia and South America. But, I don't know why people get so mad. I think they think I'm selling out to new immigrants from Asia and India and stuff like that, but I'm not that politically correct a person, so that's not my desire. I just want it to be more, distinct name for about this region of mountains and ocean and salmon and all that stuff.
Well, Doug, congratulations on stoking the debate and this book especially.
Well, thanks very much. Really appreciate the interest.
Thank you, and continued good luck with it.
Okay.
The book is called Cascadia, The Elusive Utopia, Exploring the Spirit of the Pacific Northwest. Do pick it up. It is a tremendous book. There's just so much in there that there's something for everyone, really. Ronsdale Press is the publisher, 2195, the Vancouver Suns, Douglas Todd on the line. I'm Joseph Plata.